there was no subsequent message to correct that. So how do I blame members if they come in late? That's my worry. So I'm kosher. Can somebody issue a notice correcting that?
What is the trend? The trend that came out from the public hearing was reported with a very interesting issue that are almost as far as coming
bit of a dilemma or dilemma. Which one is the correct English? You are of German descent, so and dilemma. All right. But until somebody with better English comes to the fore, we will assume that we are correct. We're starting on a bad note in that last night an SMS was issued to members purporting to change the venue, but in the process, the supervisor in the committee section, Nochal, did the unfortunate thing of sending out the wrong message in terms of the starting time. In the message, he said we're starting at 10, when, as you know, because we're dealing with legislation, we've decided to start our meetings at 9 in order to gain more time. So hopefully she'll come and apologize, because it's really thrown our meeting into disarray, especially as supervisor, she should be knowing better. But anyway, I am caught between suggesting that since we have at least two political parties here, maybe we can confidently say that we have a quorum to proceed. But I would have loved to see Ms. Sample present, because she's very consistent. And I just hope she's not a victim of this misinformation. Is she?
Mm.
And what is she? What is she saying?
She said to find a way.
Mm. All right. So is she on her way? Yeah. Now I think, in all fairness, perhaps we should defer commencing, because in any case, it's to 10, I'm sure by now. Yeah, let's give a few more minutes and see if we might get a few more people. But in the meantime, can I just check with the department? I got a report from the DDG that they, as the various departments, have met over the last 2 days, as we had requested them to discuss further ways in which this bill can be beefed up, so that their mandates and their roles are clearly articulated in the legislation itself. Today, the purpose of the discussion is to actually go through a summary prepared by the research unit of the input we got from the public hearings, as well as from the provincial and departmental briefings. So we do not expect at this stage to get a presentation from the department on the further engagement that they've had and the actual legislative proposals or amendments that they have agreed to. But maybe let me just give the DDG an opportunity to just update us in that regard.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Indeed, we have met with the various departments early this week, Monday and Tuesday, and at the moment we are not in a position to present in terms of what has transpired in those meetings, particularly because we agreed with those departments that they need to get signed off, and also that's what they also requested, which also makes sense that they need to get signed off agreements from their principals. And once we have got those signed off commitments and, you know, agreements from their departments, then we will consolidate that and we will be in a position to come and present as we had requested to the portfolio committee. Okay.
But can I say I'm worried that your team looks a bit thin. It's usually slightly fatter than that. So I'm just wondering, has it gone on some kind of a slimming course? Or because our approach is that we always require the presence of the department and relevant officials throughout the deliberations of the bill, because ultimately it's the department that's going to draft the amendment. So we don't want some of the key people to be absent during deliberations and therefore not being able to capture the issues that the committee decides. Because the problem then becomes, we meet again and we find that no work has been done, no amendments have been prepared, and all that work and the effort of the committee has not been properly, you know, responded to. So I don't know whether we're still expecting more people from your legal unit, from the relevant line function. I don't see the state law advisor here. Are they apologizing again? They apologized last week during the deliberations. I don't see the parliamentary legal advisor. We were told that we would have dedicated support from the legal section of parliament, I don't seem to see any person from that section either. So I hope this is not another sign of the children's bill in the making. Because at the end of the day, the committee will be to blame. Everybody will be throwing their blame squarely on the committee. Committee didn't do its work. Committee this, committee that. When the support that's supposed to be here is not here. What's happened to the legal section? Committee secretary. So suddenly this.
Excuse me, Chair. From our side, it's Ms. Keller that is on here. She is around. She had just, I understand, had a misfortune of the luggage not coming in last night when she came in. But she is around. She's coming. Otherwise, the team from the department is complete. We have actually, it's even more. We've got a legal person here.
Is the chief director here?
That's what I'm saying, that the chief director is around, but he's coming because her luggage did not come in last night.
No, I'm referring to
legal.
Oh, all right.
Yes,
my poor vision. It looks like Bukhobani Zulu has since strengthened her vision above mine. I thought I had better vision than her. Yeah, I must consult my shows. All right. Okay. Yeah, I think we'll have to proceed in the interest of time. I thought we've already covered that 5 minutes in the meantime. Where are we now? How many minutes left? Alright. Well, maybe whilst I'm still, so the other members will be interested. But maybe I should just proceed. The preparations for the overseas trip, I suppose, should be back on track. I don't know if Mr. Deutsch has come back to us following our. Have we made the further submission?
Yes.
All right. We asked the veteran to intervene and talk directly to the chief whip, who said the trip has long been approved and there shouldn't be any problems. So if there's any hiccups with Mr. Deutsch's office, they should purely be of an administrative nature. And I think that we will need to find a way to impress on Mr. Deutsch that we can't be put through the same agony that we were put through last time around, where we get told that no, submit this, and then the following day, no, submit that. Oh, no, you didn't submit the other thing. Oh, no, you should do this in a separate form and all of that until the flights are fully booked. Then we can proceed. So I think I'm going to have to follow up with him and find out what the status is. All right. Which other matter have we not covered? I addressed a conference that's taking place in Boksburg for 3 days. Started yesterday, it goes on for the rest of the week. It focuses on the implementation of the Children's Act. I indicated that as the committee, we will not be able to attend that conference because we have legislation at hand. So it's not as if the conference organized did not wish to get us involved. But I think it's a very good sign that already the sectors are taking it upon themselves to make sure that they meet and discuss ways of ensuring the effective implementation of the legislation. There is a parliamentary task team, as everybody might be aware, that's been deployed to visit some of the hotspots that's been affected by this xenophobic violence that toured Gauteng on Monday. And it is encouraging that organizations in our field have responded promptly in supporting victims, etc. I understand that next week there will be a report in the House from that task team, which would hopefully give the full perspective of the issue. But I thought I should just mention that as representing social development on that task team, you know, the one specific issue that relates to us that I needed to highlight is the fact of the, you know, are they removing? Because are they bringing fresh? Are they bringing more? All right. Okay. Because some people haven't arrived yet. Yeah, but I think that one of the issues that is becoming very clear, and at some point we may want to revisit this, is the capacity of our sector, especially, to deal with social crises such as this. And I think this is put to the test, the systems that we've put. The minister yesterday, for example, in his speech, indicated that in this act we provided for the Children's Act. We simply talked of a child. We didn't say put a color or a label or a tag to the child. And precisely because of that, children, irrespective of whether they are unaccompanied foreign minors, you remember we had an extensive debate on that one. When they are displaced, when they are in need of care, the system should simply respond. So I think that's going to prove to have been a correct policy approach, given the kind of situation that has started to unfold. But maybe at an opportune time, the DDG might be in a position to come back to this committee and just give a report from social development side on how we have responded, have been able to respond, whether our systems, you know, were able to stand the test of time. Because we sit here and we write up these policies and we pass these laws, but the taste of the pudding is in the eating, and it's especially situations like this that we begin to see how effective our strategies and programs are. And of course, once we finish with the legislation, we're going to, I think we've factored this in our program, a tour of the of all the provinces, especially after they shall have allocated their budget, to look at what they have done to address the capacity problem at provincial level in delivering welfare services. Yeah, it is in the next term, yeah. Yeah. So we yeah, I know that this dynamics around when parliament is rising and so on. My understanding is that our program has been approved, is it not? And the budget for it. So we're working on that assumption that if the program has been formally approved plus the budget for it, we should be able to go ahead and do this work. Yeah, so I think those are some of the preliminary issues that one can mention at this stage. And of course, we will at an opportune time call the department to come and brief us on the outstanding issue of the new social assistance regulations that are supposed to give effect to the age increase on the child support grant and the review of the means test to expand access, as well as regulations on the New Children's Act. I understand Justice has also finished drafting there, and the other implementation tools for the Act. And of course, there's the outstanding issue of the older persons regulations. We've had briefings and sort of public hearings in the sense of inviting the sector to come and address us on the concerns they had with those regulations. So we'll, at an opportune time, call the department, probably after we finished with this bill. So there, those are some of the outstanding areas of work that we still need to follow up on. So it's basically the area of implementation of legislation more broadly. All right, those are just some of the things I thought I should throw in as we waiting for more numbers of our own to come in, to flow in. Is it 10 to 10? All right. Then there's the issue of comprehensive social security. As I understand it, Treasury has income. I have to use my words guardedly now, because I'm going to be politically incorrect. assumed responsibility for driving the process of social security reform and taken over from social development, it seems. So I think there's a bit of a tussle there, because I think their perspectives are not necessarily congruent in terms of approach to the notion of comprehensive social security, including issues such as retirement reform. I understand that health has its own issues with regard to health insurance and what Treasury proposes to do to that, etc. So I think we will need at an opportune time a presentation, possibly from both social development and Treasury. And we may want to actually expand to include others, other role players like health in terms of health insurance and so on. Because comprehensive, lovely. Ms. Sample, we want to profusely apologize to the, actually it is the committee section that must. I am not sure where the supervisor is, because she ideally should be apologizing to the committee in person for the kind of confusion and recklessness that she has displayed. That was reckless, because a whole supervisor should, of all people, know better that you don't make an announcement if you are not sure of the facts. In fact, the supervisor should be more informed about the facts than the staff that works under her, you know? Otherwise, the whole system is upside down, you know? So really, this is concerning. Especially because it's not the first time we get inaccurate information from that office specifically, and other things as well. So really, I think that we're going to start complaining, you know. Yes, Madam Sambo? Sorry? Yes, are you able to bring her? Please do. We'll delay the start of the meeting. We were just having an informal chat. We felt that Parliament was at fault, so. Tell the supervisor the committee wants to talk to her. Law change may settle health cover round. So it's probably got to do with proposals to amend. Just read it and just tell me later what it's all about.
I have a change.
Once again for the confusion this morning, and hopefully the source of the confusion will come and apologize to this committee during the course of deliberation. All right, we are due today to consider the input from the public hearing and look at what we make of it in relation to the bill, as well as the input from the departments that we had last week. Of course, with the rider that the departments were instructed to go back and consult with each other and come up with clear proposed amendments that they can table before the committee, that they have of clearly articulating the role they permit themselves to play as part of this integrated, purported integrated strategy on substance abuse. So we heard from the DDG that they have offered to conclude their work by the end of the week, which means that we would therefore have to schedule them for next week. Obviously, we will not meet this Friday because it's our budget vote. We can't possibly have a committee meeting on the day we are debating. And we can't possibly even request anything tomorrow afternoon because we'll be preparing for our debate, which means that we have to plow through these two documents by today so that also we can finalize our mandate, our instructions to the committee insofar as the response that we think they should make to the hearings should be. But when they come back, as they finalize them with the other departments, they come back with a complete set of amendments that take on board whatever our responses to the public hearings shall have been. So enough of hearing from me. I think we should commence. We'll do it the same way we did it before, and that is to get the researcher to lead us. I hope everybody has a copy of the bill in front of them. If you don't, you must have it. The bill itself, because as we go through the the summary. You need to compare that which is in the summary with that which is in the book, so that it makes sense. Because this is a working tool. Please remember that from now onwards, you don't come to this meeting without among the documents you have. You have a copy of a document called the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Bill 2008. Anybody ever seen that document? Right. Yes, it should. Yes, and I. The one that I have in front of me, it says go. I only see the cover. Where is the actual book? Am I in trouble too? What happened to my bill? I only have the cover of the bill. Yes, and that rule that the bill itself slipped out of the cover. Yes, I'll find it out. Are there copies of the bill that somebody can distribute? Okay, let me just ask my secretary to go and get a few copies from the store. Oh, has she? All right. Okay. I'll also be helping. All right. I don't know how my bill slipped out of the cup. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Let's proceed. We do not have time on our side. Committee researcher, you lead us, and we'll follow you. The public hearing. Right, everybody ready? Everybody got a copy? Excellent. All right. Kick off. Let's have one meeting. Currently, we are all listening to one person. Her name is Yolisa Nogenga. Right? Okay. Let's proceed.
Okay.
Ms. Temple alerted me that she will be bringing around a group of young girls as part of the contribution towards the campaign of bringing the girl child to work. So we'll be looking forward to seeing the young upcoming leaders to come and observe our proceedings. Thank you for that example. All right, Ms. Nogenga, you can continue.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, members. The structure of the report, just like I did with the children's bill, starts with the general comments, and then the second part goes directly to the clauses of the bill. Okay, I'm not sure that you want me to do with general comments first. Okay. Okay. Okay, Chair. The first submission comes from the Civil Society Prison Reform Initiative. In short, it's CSPRI. It bases its submission within the premises of prevention and combating of torture, cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment within the context of the bill. It locates in its input on the fact that South Africa ratified the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane, and Degrading Treatment or Punishment, in short, CAT, in December 1998, and also South Africa signed the optional protocol to the UN Convention Against Torture, or OPCAT. Article 2...
Tell me, is it the same grouping that presented on this subject during the Children's Bill last year when we were dealing with corporal punishment? Those were the community law center.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Article 2, subclause 1 of CAT requires that state parties to take effective legislative, administrative, judicial, or other measures to prevent acts of torture in any territory under its jurisdiction. According to the submission, South Africa has an obligation to fulfill provisions of the aforementioned international instruments in respect of preventing and combating torture and ill treatment at service centers. In addition, OPCAT defines deprivation of liberty as any form of detention or imprisonment or the placement of a person in a public or private custodial setting which that person is not permitted to leave at will by order of any judicial, administrative, or other authority. In the context of the law, provisions identify four key issues that emerge from the above mentioned discussion. People in drug treatment centers are vulnerable to human rights abuses, and in particular to torture and other forms of ill treatment. South Africa has an obligation under the Constitution and under the international law to take all measures to prevent and combat torture as well as ill treatment of people deprived of their liberty. Many drug treatment centers keep people under conditions that would meet the definitional requirements of deprivation of liberty. The bill presents an opportunity to meet the requirements under the CAT or OPCAT in respect of drug treatment centers. The other submission.
Issue by issue. Department, do you want to respond to any of the comments from this organization in this regard?
Not at this stage, Chair.
What we're going to be doing is that we are going to deliberate issue by issue and make decisions as we proceed as to whether we think that there is a need or otherwise for any amendment to the specific provision. Yes, Honorable Bukhbani Zuma?
I just want to ask a question because I made a wrong
because they're talking about the minimum norms and standards that the department developed in 2005, and I'm like, I just want if when the department have an opportunity to just, because they are not explaining which new, is it the minimum norms and standards that talks to treatment centers. Because I made a note to say which minimum norms and standards of 2005, because they are now asking whether it's the same minimum norms and standards that are going to be used. And I was just checking whether...
Can I just indicate that when we did our round of treatment centers, this issue of minimum standards did come up. And there were concerns expressed that... the way in which they are formulated seem to suggest that, for example, faith-based treatment methods were going to be excluded. And some of the faith-based organizations were expressing concern if that's going to be the direction. I think that in the future, after we've passed this law, we should find a way of getting the department to table any administrative tool that is contemplated in the principal legislation that is meant to give concrete expression to the stated objectives of the Act, so that we can assess the extent to which the norms and standards or whatever implementation tool is in line with the legislation and is not, does not constitute a departure. But the department must respond to the question, do we have norms and standards published in 2005? And how do they deal with it?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Members. The norms and standards that I mentioned of 2005 are for treatment centers. But then, as you rightfully indicate, Honorable Chair, once this process has been finalized, obviously it is clear that we would have to look at all the, you know, tools that are there. We might even need to refine those norms and standards so that they begin to talk to the legislation. So obviously we'll have to engage in a process of looking at all the tools that are there so that those tools are talking to the revised Act.
Of course, the key point is that the existing norms and standards, as soon as this Act kicks in, cannot contradict the provisions of the Act. So to that extent, there may be a need to, I suppose, before the Act is implemented, part of what would need to be done is to ensure that the regulations are in place, that the new implementation tools are in place, etc., before the Act can kick in. Honorable Bokopane Zulu, do you want to pursue the matter further? All right, okay, let's put it.
Sorry, guys.
No, we haven't come to the next point yet.
No, it's on the same...
you mean the
same
next issue?
On the same submission.
Proceed, yeah.
Chair, you must wish me not to be here because I'm taking too much of the committee's time.
No.
The next point that I... is that on clause 4, Chair.
Yeah.
They are talking about on clause 4, subsection 1B. There's a reference on children, and I mean I'm just saying that one of the things that they raised in their submission, which I think I agree with them to a point, that's why I'm just throwing it in, that the specific mention of children that are in a treatment center and
just hold a second, we're not going submission by submission, we're going clause by clause, so.
You guys are confused. No, you are confusing us. It's the other way around. We are going submission by submission. We are dealing with the submission.
No. Yes, we're dealing with submission by submission.
Yes.
But let me explain the following. There is a summary of all the submissions that seeks to collate the submissions sequentially, in the sense that under each clause, we deal with all the submissions that have been made in respect of that clause.
So why don't we do that then?
Yeah, but what we're starting...
Why are you doing this one?
No, let me explain. Where we are now is that we're starting with the general clauses, the comments that are not clause-specific, all right? And then once we're disposed of that, then we proceed to the submissions per clause sequentially. So now it's a general input that did not point to specific clauses. All right? So that's where we are now. Yeah, so. No, but the point is that in the general submission, there may be issues that we feel that they make sense and that we must find expression for those issues somewhere in the bill. And we may want to make that decision as to where exactly. The issue before us. Yes.
The last point, yes.
The rules seem not clear. Meet the requirements under CAT and OFCAT in respect of drug treatment services. Always, is it the department certified that we have met those particular requirements of those two agreements?
In fact, the department is not allowed to give an answer that says we have no comment. The department must have comment. The department must have comment on everything that's here, because
okay, she will comment.
A policy issue is being raised by the public in relation to the bill, whether reflecting a shortcoming in the bill, generally or specifically, and the department must be able to say what their reaction to that is. Essentially, if I understand this comment here, is that this bill does not address the issue of ensuring that treatment centers as confined spaces where people are kept comply with the Convention Against Torture. The same issue was raised in respect of the Children's Bill and the Child and Youth Care Centers in terms of corporal, in the context of corporal punishment. All right? So that is the question. Are we in this bill? Have we properly taken care of ensuring that there will not be methods used that are not consistent with CAT? And that seems to be the question. As people are looking at what's that? No port and similar centers. So that's the question, really. And I think the department must have a comment.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, when you look at CAT 4.1b, that's the provision for the protection of children. We are proposing that.
There's a problem with the mic. Can you use another one?
Thank you, Chair. I was saying, when you look at plus 4.1b.
Maybe put the mic a little bit further away.
I'm usually told I must be closer to the mic. Can you hear me now, Chair?
Yes, I think the mic you're using is just very
sensitive. This time around, keep it a slight distance away from
me. Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Chair, I was saying, when you look at clause 4.1b, it does make provision for the protection of children as part of the minimum norms and standards. But I think what is lacking there is that we seem to have left everybody else except children.
Yes.
What we can then do is to insert a subparagraph that makes provision for the protection of service users as defined in the bill itself. Which will then say the minimum norms and standards would make provision for the protection of service users. And the view, our understanding is that in the minimum norms and standards, then you would indicate what practices or what type of treatment would not be allowed in a treatment center.
Shouldn't the principal legislation provide some broad principles in this regard? Because what we avoid as this committee is signing blank checks. In fact, the whole of Parliament should avoid that. Because it actually weakens your ability to make subordinate legislation, because some people may challenge your regulations or non-standards and saying they fall outside the scope or purview of the Act. So maybe you need to identify clear principles that those norms and standards should talk to,
mm-hmm.
and present those for us to consider. All right, so the point has been made. All right, let's proceed. Is that the general feeling, is the agreement within the House? Actually, if we feel that we would rather flag an issue for a fuller discussion when we come to that specific clause, once we've identified where it appropriately belongs. That's still okay. All right? Okay, let's proceed.
Okay, the next submission comes from AIDS and Rights Alliance for Southern Africa, ARASA. ARASA locates a submission within three facts which the bill fails. It says first to acknowledge that substance use is a chronic and a relapsing medical condition. Secondly, to recognize the links between substance use, HIV and AIDS, and other infectious diseases such as hepatitis C, and include key interventions to prevent and treat substance use and its associated harms. It therefore considers that interventions for addiction be approached more like other chronic illnesses such as diabetes and heart disease, and less like acute conditions such as bacterial infection and broken bones.
I think it's issues like this where the input of the Department of Health becomes critical, because we need to know what their policy from a health perspective is. But the department, do you want to respond to this one?
Thank you, Chair. When we look at clause 8.2, paragraph D, it does make reference to creating links between substance abuse, HIV and AIDS. What we were proposing is that we need to add other infectious diseases so that we include a non-conclusive list, non-exhaustive list of the diseases that you would want to link with substance abuse.
That is one aspect of the input. The other aspect seems to be saying that substance abuse itself be categorized as a chronic illness of the kind.
Substance use.
Mm-hmm. So that's another interesting issue. Substance use versus substance abuse. You see, that also raised another policy issue. You'd recall that health came and clearly endorsed the notion of harm reduction as an approach, in line with the input from ARASA. Was it ARASA? Yeah. So we said they must go back and review this bill and come back with amendments that will clearly articulate their policy position, so that as the committee we can consider that properly. Because clearly social development moves from a different policy approach, which negates harm reduction as the approach. Harm reduction as in falling outside of the your short-term not treatment, what do you call it? Detox, where it's a permanent feature, as an approach. So we need to find government. In fact, ARASA came back, commented to me over tea and said, well, we're surprised you people are so alarmed with the harm reduction approach, because it's been endorsed in national policy already, that's signed off by cabinet on this. So maybe we need to get that policy and find out exactly what it says. Because if we're saying one thing here in the bill, and there's already a policy within health that is operational, as the, was it the DDG last week who presented from health? Director. Yeah. I mean, he was clear that they already are implementing harm reduction strategies, such as the substitute drugs and all those injections and those things. Use your mic.
It's specifically I missed that, but when Arasa was saying that government has a policy on harm reduction and the substitution of all of that, they were referring to the national strategic plan. That talks. There is no such. The national strategic plan talks to an intention to say that these are some of the things that it clearly even says under harm reduction and the substitute of ranges that further dialogue is required by all South Africans. That's the only policy statement even cabinet made. There is no such. So, I mean, this brings us back where we would find ourselves, where NGOs want to write legislation. That's not true. The National Strategic Plan flexed the issue because the UN has had a debate about the issue and countries are required to report on what they have done. And that is as far as it. If you remember when we engaged with them, I went back to go double check the facts. And that is it. It's mentioned in the National Strategic Plan, which the whole country endorsed. And the National Strategic Plan clearly states that it's out there for consideration on the basis that a dialogue will happen. So what needs to happen is that government needs to start the dialogue. And the harm reduction in terms of the availability of fringes and all of it, government has to start that dialogue so that everybody can be part of the dialogue. And we can then as a country agree of where, at what level do we place the harm reduction strategy. So whoever prevented from health...
What helps that is that they are already, it may not be a fully fledged implementation, maybe at the level of piloting, but that those methods are certainly being actually being, toyed with. To use my own layperson's way of putting it.
You know, I spoke to Dr. Gundu, who's the chief director of HIV/AIDS, because it's the HIV/AIDS directorate in our fight against HIV that actually introduced this whole as a strategy for HIV prevention. There are NGOs, Mike. There are NGOs like your AIDS Law Project and your that are doing, but it's not like they are supported by government. There is a collection of what we call intravenous drug users as affiliated under the Gay and Lesbian Society, right? That are testing, but it's not like government has legalized it or has, but it's happening in your Hillbro as a program provided by an NGO.
But it's nothing that the Department of Health itself is involved in.
No, they can't implement something that
where there's
no policy.
All right. Okay. Yes,
Ms. Ntlapo? Thank you, Chair. What I think would have to really concern if indeed health did say, because also as far as I understand, even when we presented the National Drug Master Plan in cabinet, it was clear from cabinet that there is no policy that has been agreed with regard to harm reduction, and this is an issue that still has to go through debate and agreement in terms of South Africa. So we would have to really check with that presentation. I was not here. I don't know whether indeed has said, but I know for a fact that cabinet also indicated that there is no policy decision that has been taken with regard to harm reduction.
I think what would be nice is we should get a presentation from SWET, because SWET is the company that it's the NGO that deals with sex workers, and they have a program. They are funded by health, right? They have a program that deals with harm reduction, that they do for your prostitutes, both male and female. So they are not doing it as part of, in terms of the broader government. They submitted a proposal. Yes, they submitted a proposal like all organizations to say, this is our work and we're reducing HIV infection, and they were funded on that basis. And then they defined a program that they are going to implement the harm reduction to make sure that because a lot of your sex workers get in the trade while they are under influence of drugs, and therefore the reasoning and requesting of condoms becomes less. So they sort of provide that service of access to condoms, access to syringes, access. But it's not a policy, it's a prevention program that they as well are implementing. And maybe at some stage, actually, it would help the committee very well if at some stage, if we, time allows, that we call SWED to actually take you through how they do the program so that we can then find the balance, because they are supporting firstly a group that is practicing illegally, because we've not, so that you can get a sense of how they are able to get sex workers in a group and provide that service, and how are they able to get intravenous drug users, because that's where the problem starts, in a group and be able to give them. That would be an interesting, in line with the bill as we finalize it, to hear how they do it.
I'm going to flag this issue on the understanding that between social development and health, as part of the ongoing consultations that are happening between departments, this matter should be finally clarified in relation to the formulation in this book, so that we know, because something is either legal or it's illegal. And when we make a law, we need to be clear as to what we are legalizing in that law and what we not. If this is dealt with in some other law, we at least need to be alerted as to what that other law is and what it actually says in relation to that, so that there is consistency in the implementation of the law. Otherwise, we will end up in anarchy. All right? But we leave that, because these are matters that should have been resolved. You see, my other worry is where we have a clause that says the minister must develop and implement prevention program, and then we end there. What is the prevention program? How does the prevention program work? What are the principles that guide the preventing what in what manner? Because once you begin to go into specifics of some of these programs, you may find that there are certain things that might actually ideally have been properly formalized in legislation, because they are policy issues. It's one of the dangers of having blanket clause that says nothing, that doesn't tell you anything, and then you just pass it and you don't know what you're passing. And then people say, no, it's part of the prevention program, we're distributing syringes, we're doing this and that, it's part of prevention, you know. I said, no, but we never discussed this policy issue specifically. So I'm just saying that that's one of the frustrations that as a committee we have with the general sweeping language that has been used here. It's bad drafting, and we should discourage that. We must be as specific as possible. We can't just give blank checks to go and make nonsense standards and regulations on things we don't know. All right? But yeah. Yes, Ms.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether we would want to then, because if you look at clause 3 and 2, number 2, it talks to a program for combating of substance abuse, which must include a prevention program. And 1 and 2 actually talks to those types of prevention programs. Probably what we may need to look at then, if given what you are saying, to see whether 1 and 2 are inclusive enough, or we would want to add anything beyond just 1 and 2, because it talks to those prevention programs.
Sub 2 actually seems to be the one that deals with specificity, I mean with the specific types of programs, does it not?
You see, the problem is that, yeah, sub plus 3, sub 2. Yeah. 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 You see, these are a very broad sweeping policy objectives. I don't know what specific things. Well, I suppose education is clear. It talks to, what do you call that program? Umoja. So A is Umoja. I mean, Roman figure 1 is Umoja. What's Roman figure 2? What's covered in Roman figure 2? What are the specific examples of the kind of programs we're thinking of? What are those proactive measures? Can we get examples of those measures?
Sure, I may not provide examples, but you know, when we came here in February to brief the portfolio committee, you know, there was an indication that we've included things here which belong in the regulations. And at the same time, we're trying to strike a balance, and it's very difficult for us to say, if we include everything here, is it not too detailed again to say, then the portfolio committee would say, this belongs into the regulation. So it's actually very difficult to strike a balance of saying, including everything here, and at the same time avoiding, you know, turning the bill into a regulation. But if we say...
You are the drafter. Do you know what proactive measures that are being envisaged here?
So my reading of this is says proactive measures targeting individuals, families, and communities that are at risk. I'm not sure whether you want us to know...
No. I want to know from you, what is your understanding of what those proactive measures are?
My understanding is that anything that will assist people, individuals, families, and communities who are at risk is what is meant here.
What are we legalizing here? What are we sanctioning here?
My understanding is that we are sanctioning that the department should come up with corrective measures that target individuals, communities, and families that are at risk.
What is that?
So that will avoid them abusing substances.
Can you give us two or three examples of proactive measures that would be targeting this category of people?
I can respond to that later, Reverend, please, because so that I can give some examples in terms of those particular interventions or proactive measures. Because the way in which we put it here is we're even looking at not limiting to say we would need continuously to look at proactive measures that we'd be focusing on without really putting a box to say these are the current measures that are there now, but to be able to look at proactive measures that would address issues of individuals, families, as well as communities. But I will cite examples. Let me think about examples in terms of
this is just a classical example of this blank check issue that I'm trying to raise. You see, if NASA, what is it called? ARASA, comes here and says their strategy, their approach, their interventions fall squarely within the purview of this provision. How do you dispute that? Because as long as they can prove that there's an element of proactiveness, that all these ways can fit into what they're putting forward, and therefore say that there is no reason why the department shouldn't support them, let alone why they this should not be seen as a legalizing, as a licensing provision for the kind of strategies that they're coming up with. How do you dispute their assertion? How do you contradict their assertion? Because we're not writing policy, we're writing law. And law is there to legalize something or to outlaw something, you know? And if the words are so broad as to cover anything under the sun, as long as it can fit in with those words, then effectively we're sanctioning it. You see? We can't then later say, no, we didn't mean to include those things. You see? You see?
So I think we'll have to look at that
sub-clause. It is easy in policy. Policy is nice because you can say anything under the sun and use broad sweeping language. That is, I almost said that is sexy. But when it comes to legislation, you have to be tight. You need to be precise. You need to be saying what you're saying and not say what you're not saying. All right? Mm. Certainly, I can confidently say that Roman figure 1 is clear as daylight. It's Kimoja. All right? But I don't know what Roman figure 2 is. Well, I might know what it is, but I don't know what it is not. You see? And that's my fear. What are we legalizing? Given the disputed terrain of what are acceptable methods and what are not acceptable methods. I mean, it's not as if there's consensus within the sector as to what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. Right? Especially in the light of what we've just received as a report, that cabinet said certain things need to be dialogued further. What if other people say, no, actually those things are already contained as proposals in policy documents. We are saying that this bill has taken the matter a step further by legalizing them, indirectly, as it may be. Anyway, let's reflect on some of these things and come back and look at whether we can't list very specific criteria about the kind of a proactive measures that we're specific. Even if we say without limiting the generality of this provision, the following are the kind of interventions. You see? Yes, Ms. Mark?
I think they're trying to do this with B, C, D, and E,
mm-hmm.
because here they specify early intervention programs that provide for the early identification of substance abuse, treatment programs including the provision of counseling to the families of such persons, aftercare and reintegration programs for the integration of people who abuse substances into their communities after treatment. Sorry, that is, I have to reread.
No, let me indicate the following in relation to that.
Okay.
All right. Each of this paragraph is almost a chapter on its own.
Yep.
Mm. All right. So this is not an elaboration of Roman figure 2.
Yeah.
Each of them is a whole field of focus on its own. So what this chapter seeks to do is, or this clause seeks to do, It seeks to outline the broad,
okay,
the key area of focus. All right. Then it goes. Do we have anywhere where we deal specifically with, for example, with proactive measures, or is this it? Is this where they're dealt with? Yes, we will. We will. But it's in relation to this issue about what was that provision? What was that thing that? Yeah. All right. Yeah. All I was saying in this regard is that to the extent that there are question marks on certain strategies or policy approaches. All right. We need to look at how we're going to approach that in this bill, especially in the light of having the kind of clauses that provide very generally, and that could be interpreted to be providing a blank check for a whole range of possible options. If that's what we want to provide as a framework, to say we want all these things to then be legal, because there's this general provision that is there, which creates an umbrella, then that's the approach. So we need to think carefully about how we've cut some of this thing. But I'll accept. I think that we're flagging this issue. We're saying go and give more thought. We would prefer greater specificity without elaborating on the programs. I accept. You'll do that in the regulations and the norms and standards. But the key elements that underpin a specific area must be there in the legislation, because that is the source of the enabling, that's the enabling aspect of the provision. All right.
There's also just one comment I want to make to the department, just as we, but we'll come back to it in detail. Throughout this bill, one of the things we might want to fix is constantly we have mixed services and programs together. And that is part of what you are struggling with, is that, and I think that's what this whole discussion is about. So try to separate, because programs are actually, we tend to not want to define programs in legislation, because then it becomes too, you know, you can't move. But services we try to put in. So what you have done throughout the bill is you've lumped services and programs together. And I think in the process of doing that, you found yourself explaining services and explaining programs, because you've got services and programs in the same sentence right through the bill. So try to pull out programs so that the bill talks about services. And that will then automatically fix the very discussion we are having of Roman figure 2. Because then, on your norms and stand, you know, here you will talk about giving indication on how you are going to sort of ensure that a program is in line with the legislation, without necessarily talking to the details of the program. Whereas then you will explain the service, and then we will leave you alone to determine the minimum norms and standards for that service. That way, it would be very clear, and there won't be a mixture of too many things.
One question that had been raised by Arasa was the fact that the bill, there's three bullets. The first bullet is the bill fails to acknowledge that substance use is a chronic and relapsing medical condition. I think it's a key question. to the whole issue of substance abuse. Does the department wish to respond to that, or it wants to defer this to a further engagement with health on the question?
Yes, thank you, Chair. We will request to engage with health.
No, that's good enough. Okay, let's proceed, researcher. Young people, welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. My name is Michael Masuta. I am the chairperson of the committee. The committee is currently considering a new law that is going to deal with the issue of the prevention of, it's actually called the prevention of and treatment for substance abuse, given the challenge of drug abuse, especially among young people. The committee or government feels that it needs to strengthen its strategies and ways of arresting the situation and managing it. So it's one bill that I think talks directly to you people at that age group. But welcome so much to the committee, and we're glad to have you here. All right? Okay, let's proceed. We're currently looking at going through the public submissions. We had public submissions to the committee, and those are summarized, and we're going through those submissions because we have to respond to what the public are saying and see whether we can accommodate what they're proposing in the legislation or not. All right. Ms. Nogenga?
Yeah. Okay, Chair. And the next submission comes from the South African Human Rights Commission. It's a SAHRC. It supports the bill in that it has strong focus on the prevention of substance abuse rather than concentrating merely on treatment of substance abuse. It welcomes that the bill has a broad scope and that it will apply to alcohol abuse as well as drug abuse. It further submits that the bill also adopt a rights-based approach to the rights of service users. For instance, the Mental Health Act of 2002 sets out rights for mental health care users, as well as the Older Persons Act 2006 sets out the rights of older persons in facilities. The submission notes that admission of an involuntary service user to a treatment center is akin to a criminal procedures and social workers. Given the lack of social workers in South Africa, it poses the question of whether the system will be able to cope with the procedures that are set out in the bill. It also sees it questionable the extent to which the procedures will be available to poor and rural persons who do not have access to services.
All right. Department, do you want to react to that?
Yes, Chair, we're still checking our notes. I think the problem, though, Chair, is that it would have been easier for us if we knew exactly what to come and, what questions to expect, so that we could have prepared. So this is something I'm checking my notes, because we check them as we go.
No, but we did indicate last week that this week we are going to be going through the submission, and the procedure always is that we afford the department to respond to each of the inputs from the public before, as a committee, we can apply our minds and decide which instructions to give to you in terms of amendments that we may want you to go back and draft and present back in the committee. That's the purpose of the exercise. So is the department saying that it's not ready to interact with us on this matter this morning? Because if we lose this week, it might mean that we lose the possibility of finishing this bill this year. And if we lose the opportunity, it means the bill is likely to fall off
from the parliamentary program for the year, and it would have to be reintroduced afresh in the next parliament. That is the seriousness of the situation. Our task is to respond to every issue that the public has raised and decide whether we are going to accommodate the proposal from the public by way of effecting amendments to the bill before us, or whether we're going to keep matters as they are. And we can't simply agree with everything without rational basis for that. Yes, Honorable Mokopane Zulu.
At the beginning, it's just that I don't know, I'll have to check, but I was, at the beginning when we did the first presentation, I think that there was the issue that we ratified ICAT, right? But then as you go, you have a commission that is responsible for the rights, says that we've not ratified it. So there's like confusion, unless if I don't know how to read English. But that's what they are saying. The NGO said we have. I don't know much about the ratification of that piece of legislation, but the first presentation we dealt with gave us the impression that we have. Yes. The Human Rights Commission says that given the fact that South Africa has not ratified it, and that they are still to ratify it in the near future, maybe consideration must be given. But the second part that worries me is that the Human Rights Commission goes further to say that Chapter 7 deprives the service users of their liberty. And I'm reading Chapter 7, and unless it, I don't know English, it doesn't say that. Because I'm just saying, the Human Rights Commission says that the bill as it's written now in Chapter 7 actually deprives the liberty of the service users. And when I read Chapter 7, I don't find.
In my reading of Chapter 7, Section 44, I've got a question there. There's something about somebody being rearrested, and I said something, even if voluntary, it's called a revocation of license, which I want to know what this license thing is, but I presume that it means they must be rearrested. Page 20 in this, or on my page 20. It's section 44.
All right. The points have been made. I'm not sure if the department is in a position to respond to this. You see, my other worry is that the state law advisor is not here. All right? The state law advisor is not here. The parliamentary legal advisor is not here. All right? Yes, please proceed.
No, Ms. Sampo was talking to the one bullet that I read, but they are saying the whole chapter.
That's not
zero. No, they're saying that one bullet is what talks to that, but that's what, like in 40, what did you say?
44.
And here they are talking about 7. Yes, that's what I'm talking about, Ms. Sampo. Because I read 7. Yes, they are saying the whole list. And I mean, certain bullets on 7 are very useful. So, but my main point here is there somebody that can check for us whether we ratified this thing or not?
Yeah. No, that should be, in fact, the legal section should be here to verify for us.
Because I need to know, because then I can talk from authority.
Can we flag that issue?
Which
as far as I recall,
the
Convention Against Torture.
South Africa is signatory to that convention. Yeah, the torture convention. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the thing. Look, it
it's two things.
That's why I'm saying that we need to establish. That's why I'm saying we should establish from Parliament legal advice.
Yes.
To actually, because ratification happens here in Parliament.
Yes,
anyway.
And I can't remember seeing it in Parliament. Government, fine, that I know. But whether we ratified it to be able to domesticate it, that's the question I'm asking.
Yeah. You see, this thing has also been raised in the during the Children's Bill by the Community Law Center, urging us on the, remember the clause on child labor, where they raised the issue of us needing to specifically provide for the implementation of this convention and provide for it in that legislation. We decided then that it was not the appropriate place to deal with the issue, if I recall well, and we didn't go ahead and specifically provide for it, for a legislative arrangement for its implementation. But I think the point is made that we need to verify whether we have in fact ratified. And unfortunately, the legal service is not here to clarify the issue. All right? But the further question then will be, if we have ratified, is there anything specific we need to do to give effect to it in this bill? But there's the broader issue that they are raising. They're saying that people who are admitted in this facility should have the rights clearly articulated in the legislation. In the same way as other legislation that we've dealt with ourselves has sought to do. For example, the Older Persons Act that we passed in 2006 clearly articulated the rights of people who are admitted to some of those facilities, especially because of the abuse that used to take place. And I think the context here is looking at the various treatment methods that are used in different facilities and the challenges surrounding human rights violations. Assertions have been made against the treatment methods in Newport, for example, where the young people are made to be in the company of vicious dogs, which apparently can rip you off in a split of a second. To ask the question, are those methods acceptable? Shouldn't we? Because you see the difficulty, you're going to come with norms and standards. And those norms and standards are going to be challenged purely on the basis of ultra vires, on the basis that you have exceeded, you have overstepped your mandate in terms of the legislation. That's why it becomes important on rights-based issues to rather cover yourself by making sure that it's in the legislation. Rather have the act itself challenged rather than be challenged purely on a technical ground, not on substance. On the technical ground that you have exceeded the intentions of the lawmaker.
Should I not respond to that one?
Yes. All right. Ms. Sample first.
Before you respond, I just want to give an example of exactly what the chair is saying. In chapter 10, 61, page 28, under regulations, it talks there about normal hours of labour. Now, you know, as far as I know, not even prisoners do labour anymore. So what are we talking about here for labour as a regulation? Presumably it's a form of punishment or something, I'm not sure. But I'd like some information on what that's all about.
Well, I suppose it was just by way of example.
It was an example.
But obviously we will flag some of these issues, and when we get to the specific clauses, you know, come back to them. But the department wants to respond.
So on the issue of the bill not being silent on certain rights of people admitted at the treatment centers. Yesterday we had a meeting, on Monday, with other government departments and in particular health, and we deliberated around the rights of people admitted at the treatment centers. and it was agreed that we agreed that we are going to look at their act and import certain provisions there and make them part of our act, where they look at how they deal with the rights of people admitted at mental health institutions, and then see where appropriate use similar provisions in this bill.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. We'll see what you come back with, and then we can engage with that once we have something in writing. Okay. Anything else on the Human Rights Commission aspect covered here? All right. Let's proceed to the next one, Association for Reduction.
Yes. Another one related to the aspect, saying this, the process that we follow is like very criminal in nature. It's like we are following criminal process.
Okay, you want to respond to that and use your microphone?
Sure. You know, our view is that we really need to have some due process followed. We can't just take people to a treatment center, especially involuntary service users. But if you look at the process, it's actually not a criminal process. We just say you come up with an affidavit, some statement, and there's an inquiry conducted, but it's not criminal in nature, where we then determine whether or not this is the person who is supposed to be referred to a treatment center. Otherwise, we end up taking wrong people to treatment centers and be faced with litigation.
Can you briefly summarize what that process is?
Sure. Although the intention is that we may have changed it slightly, but the bill provides for an instance where anybody who's closely related to somebody who's abusing substances, that person can approach a prosecutor to say this person is abusing substances and is either a harm to himself or to those who are closer to him or her. And then the prosecutor can request that a summons be issued for this person to be arrested, but we are going to change the wording from arrest to apprehend. Then this person would then be brought before a magistrate who would then inquire whether or not this is the correct person who has been apprehended, because so that you are sure that the person is before the magistrate is the right person. And after an inquiry and after having received a report from a social worker, the magistrate can then make a decision on whether or not this person must be referred to a treatment center. And I think this is what the human rights is saying is a criminal process. But we are saying it's not a criminal process. We need to follow some due process before a person is referred to a treatment center.
Maybe it's because the person that does it is the prosecutor that made them think that. But the principle really is that where you deprive any person of liberty, or where you deprive, in the case of a child, a parent of his or her child as a result of state intervention, as opposed to somebody voluntarily, you know, presenting themselves, that ordinarily you would require some kind of a court order that enables you to compel. And that is the rationale behind it. Hence, in the Children's Act, the removal of a child has to be subject to a ratification by a court, a children's court, within a certain period of time, for example. And in fact, I'm not even sure whether we have provided for emergency situations here, where you may want to remove a person who is about to harm themselves or urgently, get that person incarcerated pending a hearing before a magistrate's court, so that the court may decide whether to authorize the further detention of that person.
The comment that the chair is talking about is what we talked about. I mean, I do hear what the Human Rights Commission, they are doing their job, but at last week we then said that, I mean, it's important. We know that drugs goes with a lot of gender-based violence. Now, for me, I would want that section to also talk about what the chair said, but also to talk about, I mean, you find that a mother or father who's abusing drugs when they've had their fix. Nobody sleeps that night. It's the whole lavai in that house. So we need to, and every time we have to remove the children and the mother or whoever, why don't we remove that person? I mean, if they are the ones that must go, because they are the lavayas. And that is where what you are explaining comes in. To say, in that case, how do you deprive them? That person has no liberty. We take it away. So you go. Yes, then that's the provision I would want to see. Because then it means for that Friday night when he got his fix and he's going to cause that lavai, he's the one that must go stay in a police cell. Tomorrow morning they deal with him, then he'll be nice and sober. So that we it's consistent with the Domestic Violence Act, and it's also consistent with the provisions we've made in the Children's Act. Because we need to, as much as everybody's got rights, but if you are an addict, and first and foremost you are now becoming a danger to other people surrounding you, the law must intervene to protect those that are around you. And I mean, that also must be extended.
It needs to protect yourself or
exactly
to protect others around
you. And that must also be stressed. That section should also have a section on young people. I mean, we see young people practically in school uniform, both, and then you see that person, but there's no law. Yes, that I want to see this, because I mean, my daughter, I made this example the last time. The last time I called the police, and they take their time and they never. And you see young people busy with that pipe thingy. So we need to be able to empower people to intervene. And we're not a parent of that child, you shall meet that child somewhere in a rehabilitation or whatever. So that we make sure that we intervene with young people as well. And this is a section where I would also want to see a specific reference to children. So that there isn't the element of it's not your child, which is what is existing. So that I'm able to intervene when a child is addicted to drugs and the parents don't want to see that that is a problem. And then the child can go through the children's court, because we did not make provision in the children's court, I mean in the children's act, for children who are drug addicts. And I can tell you the age is up from 5 years, and that is so real.
Can I say, just to throw another element into the mix, obviously justice, the DG was here. He was trying to find a way to extricate justice out of this thing. And in practice, that's what tends to happen. You go to a prosecutor and say, this young fellow is breaking in, is doing all kinds of things in the name of drugs, and he's out of control. Can't the criminal justice system intervene? And either they'll tell you go talk to social workers, or they will just say we don't have enough capacity to deal with this, or whatever it is. I sense that the DG was moving along the same lines to say they are actually moving in the direction of taking many people out of the criminal justice system or issues as possible. And in a sense, without him expressly saying so, I don't know, we'll get to the submission from Jan. He seemed to be saying that even the idea of having the prosecutor performing this role is something that they do not support. They would find diversion, I don't know how diversion is supposed to work, but that diversion should not include the prosecutor, because prosecutors must deal with hardcore crime, etc., etc. We'll get to the submission from the department, but my fear is that maybe we don't want to repeat this discussion, and maybe we should find a way to deal with related issues at the same time. Should we perhaps just check what Justice is saying in regard to this? Just check the submission from the department side.
Well, okay.
Yes.
What Justice said, which they were very strong, I mean, I'm just trying to summarize it because I still have it in my head, was that they feel that on this particular area we must introduce in the Act the diversion. That's one. But also we must include the principles of restorative justice.
That's
the policy. Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, Mr. Yes,
it is about
yes. No, no, the criminal thing is just Human Rights Commission doing its own. Wait, let's first clarify before you proceed. Ms. Temple, are you introducing an angle here? Yes, that's fine. But it seems as if you're making a point. Let me hear that point.
Yes. I was having a quick look at the justice submission, the summary. And, you know, the emphasis on restorative justice as opposed, and the diversion programs as opposed to criminalizing issues is for involuntary users.
That's the subject of discussion.
Yeah.
That's what we discussed. All right. I thought maybe you're bringing another element of the actual commission of a crime that involved, which is the other area they covered, by the way. Because they said, rather than substance abuse being an aggravating factor, it could actually indirectly be a mitigating factor, in the sense that it would be the basis for saying that this person was driven by this thing. Therefore, the response should be to put this person into a program as opposed. I suspect that's how courts generally approach it.
But hey, surely if that's going to be your defense, then you have to prove that in the court. I mean, that's not something that we can put in.
No, that's place. Another. That's how I was saying that. Are you moving into that realm at this stage?
I'm not.
Because I thought it's related, but that's another issue. That's another level. All right, Ms. Okay, Ms. Dudley, you also want to interrupt Honorable Kupani Zulu?
Sorry.
She's still on the floor, but...
It's just obviously, it's dangerous for us to go just too quickly into that mode of thinking. Because if I want to go and get revenge on my neighbor, I make sure that I smoke something first or pop something first. My 19-year-old nephew had his throat cut by somebody who had just happened to take something beforehand and got off for a little couple weeks holiday in Sterkfontein and was out in the community being a danger again. So it is a horrible reality, and of course that whole community then is in fear again of what repercussions. So it's an easy excuse if we make it too easy. So we can't just dismiss the justice system.
We have two options. Either we deal fully with all the proposals from justice add to the sequence, or we flag that until we get to the point when we deal with the departmental submissions, including that of justice. It so happens that that submission relates directly to this submission insofar as that aspect is concerned. So what do we want to do? Honorable Bukhopani Zulu, maybe you'll provide us guidance because you're on the floor.
Well, none of the interrupters said anything I didn't want to say, Chair. They were just saying what exactly I was trying to say, but also to just remind us that when we engaged justice, even then in defense of the Department of Social Development, at that point we said that they can't want social development. Who is the one that's picking up the pieces? After all of this has happened, to now do what they want them to do, and that is the point I was just saying, to say that this, they clearly said it's a social development problem. So we are going to make social development to now deal. They are developing issues of how they are going to respond to the impact. And now justice wants us to even now, in this bill, be nice to them as well and take away certain things that we feel, if it's dealt with in a particular way as social development, it will minimize the social impact. And that's our business. We're not in the business of making it easy for them. We're in the business of minimizing the social impact. And if for us, it means that what the department explains, that this is the way, and we see it from a social development perspective, that is going to minimize the social impact, that's what's going to be in the bill. They can go and have another section in their own legislations of the courts and administration of justice.
You batter your wife and get taken to a holiday resort.
Yes, I mean, and then everybody says no, but you know, he just got picked. So, and that I raised even on that day to justice to say that
we can't say that because we are the ones picking up the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to improve in the line of what the department is proposing and keep it that way.
Before we take a stand, department. Oh, the chief. Okay. Shall we quickly, if we can round off this one, we'll have to pause and look at how we're going to take it forward. But let me first get the department's immediate reaction to this. How do you see this thing from your point of view?
There are so many questions. I'm not really... I mean, we kept on diverting, so I'm not sure which direction are we heading.
No, it's simple. Look, I'm going to repeat that the department team is not complete. Is it complete now?
It is complete, okay.
Because you see, some of these things are policy issues. And we do not necessarily want the legislative drafters to point us to clauses. We want to understand the policy approach that Department of Social Development is putting forward. We can then worry about how the law should respond to it. But clearly there are certain policy issues that arise. Here is the policy issue. Justice wants diversion generally to be the response to the problem of substance abuse as a criminal justice issue. As the general thrust. All right? What we need to clarify is what does that mean, first of all? Does it mean that if somebody sniffs and then goes and breaks in the next door neighbor? Well, that seems to be saying two things, because they're saying the underlying crime needs to be dealt. All right? But we're not sure what that means. Are they saying that if it's established that there's a clear link between the break-in and the taking of the drugs, that they are going to say that this is a case for diversion. The person should actually go to a treatment center as opposed to being prosecuted for the break-in. What exactly are they proposing? That's something we're going to need to establish first. But then secondly, we're going to have to ask social development, do you agree with that general approach, or do you think, from your point of view, that a different approach needs to be adopted? All right? So let's reflect on this and the general criminal issue, justice system and how it should respond in a more broad sense, including the issue of the involuntary committer through the justice system as opposed to other ways of committal without going through the justice system. All right, on that note, tea break, 10 minutes, and then we proceed. The pace is not very good thus far, but hopefully we will pick up pace. I already see us going into the late night tonight, and we may need to continue tomorrow afternoon. Have we got permission tomorrow? All right, we have permission to sit. If we can't finish today, we're going to finish tomorrow. But yeah, we're going to finish late today. All right? Yeah. All right, 10 minute break.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
2008 is the ultimate day on which this committee must either vote on this bill, and or we can forget about it being part of the of one of your achievements that go into your CV as you go back to the public and ask for them to vote you back into parliament.
Okay. Given the battle.
Is that good news or bad news? So take all your jokes and tell me how you feel about it.
Given the bad news, can I make a proposal?
Yes.
Okay.
Given the fact that we have this less hours of work, I want to make a proposal here that we take the general and the clause by clause together. So we go to clause one, we look if there's anything on general that has an impact on clause one, and then we look at clause, and then we know that by today we finished with clause one and we said to the department, go fix clause one and go fix it this way. We go to clause two, chapter, so that we don't do what we are doing now where we look at the general and then we're still going to have time to look at the
Now you know why I like you so much.
So why don't, so that we can give, by the end of today, we would have given the department clear instructions up to how far we can get to go and fix. And to say that, say, by the way, next week, when you pass the bill on the 13th of June, I shall be at the UN. So, I'm leaving on the 7th, and I'm only back on the 16th. So, to make sure I have my enough pay while I'm here on the bill, can I please propose we go clause by clause so I can have as much pay as possible?
I must tell Sai that there must be something he's doing right. To get you performing at this top four. Excellent. All right. I completely agree. Is there anybody who doesn't agree?
No, I agree.
So we deal with everything under the sun. Oh, Ms. Sample, yeah?
I'm not disagreeing, Chair, but I'm putting a clause in there. That this bill has got to be dealt with properly. We are not rushing through it for the sake of getting through it in 2 weeks. And if I feel that it's not being properly dealt with, then I will have an objection to raise.
All right. Agreed. We'll do justice to the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And if
If it means, yes, Ms. Rajpali.
Yeah, I feel that I agree with my colleague here, but it's a very big but in the inverted comma, that if should we not be done in time, that we allowed to ask an extension.
And the new parliament.
Thank you.
We may need to write a formal letter to the speaker and indicate the difficulties that we are experiencing.
Correct.
And indicate that we'll do the best we can to pass this bill by the required deadline, but that these are some of the challenges that we experience, so that they know upfront, including the fact that as we are sitting now, the legal advisors of the department are not here.
No,
I mean, of the department. PMV, can you correct the recording there? It's not the legal advisors of the department, but the legal advisors of parliament who are not here today. As we are deliberating, and the state law advisor are not here today. Let it be properly recorded. Right? Despite the fact that we postponed our deliberations last week, Friday, as well as yesterday, to allow departments more time to confer, because clearly they needed it. The bill is not adequately providing the necessary integrated response that it has promised, by ensuring that each department's role is clearly articulated in the legislation itself. And that's the instruction we've given them, to go back and relook and come back with a common position that says, as the collective, this is how we propose we beef up the document, the bill, in order to clearly articulate our co-responsibilities in this regard. Ms. Dudley?
Thanks. I'm wondering, would it be useful? Would it be useful to hear from the department how long it's actually going to take to get that integrated draft?
They said by Friday.
And is
so what?
Friday.
So what we're doing now is to give them further instructions, so that as they do that, as they finalize that work, they can already factor in what's emerging out of this engagement today. All right?
Because it's just seeming more and more impossible.
Because clearly when we meet next week, we won't be having lots of smiles on our faces. We'll be very tense and very nervous. And we will be hoping that the department will be correcting the look on our faces by giving us good news. All right? They'll be coming to put smiles on our faces. All right? That is the deal that we are entering into with the department. We don't smile from today until Tuesday, and from Tuesday we're looking forward to have the department putting smiles on our faces. All right. DDG?
I'm fine, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to get clarity on whether we're coming back next week or by Friday. So I'm clear, and I want to say that by this end of this week, as we had indicated earlier on, we need to finalize our processes. Then we come back next week.
Yes, when we will not meet on Friday as a committee, because we're debating our budget. Anyway, but come next week, Tuesday, we are marching. No excuses, no, we still want to consult, no, we don't have answers. You're going to have answers on all the questions come next week, Tuesday. All right? Right. So today we're making sure that all issues are put on the table up front, so that you know what it is that you're going to need to provide answers on next week. Right. So, in the light of the proposals from Honorable Bukhubani's group,
We are now going to start with a new approach. Are we leaving the definition section for the time being?
I wanted to talk about
that. Or not? All right. We're still on process.
Yes.
All right. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. On the issue of definition, this one proposal, they are saying, who's this? The Human Rights Commission, I think. I'm now on clause one. Okay. Your pages are not the same as mine.
Page four.
So I can't help you.
Page four, at the end of list of content.
Page eight of the summary, I'm told.
Chapter one deals with definitions and objects of the Act.
Page four of the Act, page eight of the summary.
Okay.
Four and eight.
All right.
One, I wanted to talk to the issue of the definition of youth, which is being requested. That I think, and we've got legislation, and our legislation takes precedence. So it would then define youth as defined in the legislation for young people. So I there's a proposal. I support the fact that the same route that we've taken, we must insert in reference of youth because the third one is captured. And then secondly, there was a proposal about the vulnerability.
Which input is it? Which organization are we dealing with?
We are on clause one, definition, South African Human Rights Commission.
And that page? Eight of the...
No, your one is page nine, like mine.
Oh, all right.
Page nine at the bottom, like in the middle of the page.
All right. Oh, all right.
Okay.
Plus one definition.
Yes.
South African Human Rights Commission. All right.
Okay. I wanted to say to the department, I support, maybe because we're dealing about substance and young people tend to be... more vulnerable, that we insert a definition of youth as in the Youth Act. So that will be all Henrietta at the 35, not the United Nations, not the UNICEF one of 25. And I also wanted to talk to the issue of vulnerable groups. Even last week I said that there's a proposal that we must define vulnerable groups. And I'm still for the view that you can't define vulnerable group as per the request of some of the submissions. We can only define vulnerability in relation to substance abuse, not in the broader definition of vulnerability as we are requested to do. And that is on clause one, my input on clause one. Sir. We do define vulnerability in relation to substance abuse, not what we are being requested to do, that we must define vulnerability in its broader sense. I would have a problem with that. Thank you very much. And please.
All right. So that is in relation to the second point you've made in relation to which submission?
It's the same submission.
All right. I mean vulnerability.
Yes. They want vulnerability to be defined beyond the borders of what we are dealing with, and I would have a problem with that.
All right.
So I'm supporting the insertion of youth, so the department can insert young youth, and also that they would only define vulnerability in line with as it relates to substance abuse, not as per the request that it should be a broad...
In relation to you?
No. There's two proposals there. There's the issue of young people. So I said that there we support in the Youth Act that they must go there and insert that definition in relation also to age that is up to 35 as per our legislation, not the UN legislation that talks to 25. And then secondly is that there's a request that we must define vulnerability beyond the borders of substance abuse. And we say that we have to define vulnerability in line with substance abuse.
Yeah.
So that's my own definition, what I wanted to say.
Department, you want to respond? Any member who wants to add or subtract? Department, you want to respond?
Chairperson, we would agree with
Use your mic. Are you using your mic?
Yes, Chair, I am. Chair, we agree with the proposal. We think it's in order. We will insert a definition on youth in line with the National Youth Commission legislation, and then the issue around vulnerability. I think we will add the youth as one of the vulnerable groups, but not go beyond that in terms of trying to define vulnerable groups, to say what are vulnerable outside of the context of this legislation.
But you must improve, because your definition of vulnerability doesn't say anything right now. It just says vulnerable person means children, older person, and service users recovering. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the vulnerability, the definition as it stands now, must be worked on.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it must list the people that are vulnerable, but it must talk to vulnerability. What constitutes vulnerability? You would have already spoken about children.
Yeah.
There, you would have spoken about young people and everybody else. And here you're defining what constitutes vulnerability.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's what makes them vulnerable. These people that you have on your list.
Yeah.
And that's...
And the fact that you are an older person does not necessarily mean you are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Especially in the context of this legislation. All right. And remember, we're not writing policy, we're writing law. So in policy terms, we use some of these concepts loosely. But when you write law, you have to be very, very tight. All right. We are still under definitions. Is there anything else? I know Honorable Bokopani Zido has taken the lead. But researcher, take us forward.
Okay, I'm going to start with the South African National Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependence, the SANCA. SANCA proposes the following amendments to the definition. Provide a clear definition for child and youth care, substance abuse treatment center. Include behavioral addiction, such as gambling, sex addiction, and internet addiction. Define detoxification. On page 5, definition of rehabilitation, and in line to psychiatric to read psychological. In the definition of vulnerable persons, add persons with disabilities due to physical condition and high risk to use or abuse of substance. It proposes that objects of aid should be more specific regarding inpatient and outpatient treatment centers, youth treatment centers, community-based services, and halfway houses. The Center Drug Authority, CDA in short, proposes this amendment. Amend rehabilitation to reach after physical, spiritual, intellectual, psychological, or social medical care other than that required by substitution therapy. The reason behind that, the present wording is incorrect and does not reflect the true definition of rehabilitation or the requirement for the use of substitution therapy.
Mm-hmm.
The Substance Misuse Advocacy Research Training, SMART, in short, it recommends that the language of the following, which is unnecessarily restrictive, somewhat clumsy, in some cases technically incorrect, be amended as follows. Aftercare means ongoing professional support for service users after a former treatment episode has ended. Do you want me to read the original text or everything, or just their insertion? Okay. Community-based services, substance abuse prevention, and treatment service rendered to a community. Halfway house means a sober living environment for people who have finished formal treatment episodes and require a protected living environment. In-patient service refers to a substance abuse treatment program where the service users are resident. Outpatient service means a substance abuse treatment program where the services are not resident. Person affected by substance abuse, it is recommended that this definition be deleted completely, as this precludes service users, family members who have their own drug and alcohol problems getting help. Private treatment center means a privately owned, for profit or not for profit, inpatient or outpatient center offering treatment for substance abuse. Public treatment center means a government owned inpatient or outpatient treatment center. Rehabilitation, it recommends that this definition be discarded as it is incorrect and contradictory, in that it speaks of psychiatric at the same time not including medical care. Rehabilitation from substance abuse is not possible unless medical care is given. That's all, Chair.
Right. So,
the full suite of proposed amendments or insertion of new definitions in the definition clause, which is clause one. Let's just get the department's reaction before discussion to all the proposals. We've dealt with the one aspect about vulnerability already, and youth. Yeah, in fact, I think it's a better idea. Let's deal with both submissions in one go. So that, yeah. All right. Let's look at the department, the government side.
Okay, I must just apologize. I just realized the government doesn't have page numbers. No. So if you just count from the first page after the cover page, so before page three. The submission from the National Youth Commission, it recommends that in the definition of vulnerable, youth should be included, especially when determining preventative measures that are to be undertaken to prevent experimentation with substance of abuse. National Youth Commission points out that the challenge has been that young persons who are older than 18 years often have their needs ignored. Similarly, it argues that rehabilitative methods aimed at youth do not include children in conflict with the law. That's all.
All right. Is that the only input on the definition?
From government side.
Yes.
All right. Okay, department, you want to react to each of those proposed definitions?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I just wanted to say one thing. I think the definition. Okay. I wanted to say that most of this.
You can confer, but confer quietly.
Okay. The definition, as proposed by this list of organizations, can only improve some of the definitions that are in the Act. And I wanted to propose that the department, instead of responding, but looks at that. For instance, you look at how the department has defined a treatment center. They say a treatment center means a public treatment center or a private treatment. I mean, that doesn't tell you anything. A treatment center should be a place that provides treatment, because you've got halfway houses, you've got community. So you can't say a treatment center is a private center and a public, because then you are not bringing in your halfway houses, which you defined up there. You're not bringing in your community base where somebody receives treatment at home. So I wanted to propose that instead of us, the department must look at these definitions and improve
and use these definitions to improve the definitions that are there on that they have on the Act. Because then that saves our time there, because there's a lot of good definitions from this, what the public proposes, if the department can take time to measure them.
Sir,
otherwise, we sleep here.
That's your suggestion, which is a good suggestion, but let's hear what the department says.
Chair, I would support the suggestion that is made, that let's look at the proposals that have been made and then see how we can improve the definitions that we have. Obviously, we'll take into account that already you have given us guidance with regards to the definition of vulnerable groups. So we'll take into consideration that one, and then we will look at the others based on the proposals that have been made.
But can I also just indicate that the approach has always been, and the understanding was, the department sits with us when we have public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
They get the story as we get it too. We have taken the further step of summarizing the submissions and giving the department a copy of the summary so that we work from the same page. But that in the meantime, they would go back and apply their minds to what the public have to say, so that when we start sitting down and going through those submissions, the department is already ready with answers, not to come and say, we will go back and come back, because that becomes unfair to the committee, especially given the fact that we have very limited time. We're having width on behind our backs. And that is the difficulty we have, especially where you realize that some of the suggestions are meant to improve on your own work. You should be showing appreciation back immediately, you know, applying your mind to these things and sorting it out and coming back and saying, yeah, we've looked at it and yeah, we agree straight outright, and let's rather we engage you on the basis that you agreed to something which we think you shouldn't have agreed to, you know. But now it seems we've lost 2 weeks effectively of work. But even if they do, then it means we start again, we go back again and get the answers again. So that's my worry, repetition of work, you see. Ms. Keller, are you disagreeing with my assessment of what is happening?
No, Chairperson. I don't think I want to answer that directly, Chairperson. But rather to say that
at the risk of crushing the committee on the wrong side.
Yes, Chairperson.
Well, you've learned your lessons from the older
Chairperson.
I have,
Chairperson.
All right.
Chairperson, we have considered the proposal. And we have incorporated most of the proposals in terms of definitions. I think one area though that we felt that would need the input of the committee is the whole issue, the input by I think it's Sanka in relation to the issue around behavioral addictions, such as other addictions, such as gambling, sex addiction, and internet addiction, because this legislation is meant specifically for substance abuse, and it doesn't address other forms of abuse. So we would need guidance from this committee, because if this is the situation that we want to address all other forms of addiction, then it means that this act will have to be rewritten completely.
We haven't made a ruling.
Yeah.
We may have expressed reservations during the hearings.
Yeah.
But this is the session for us to make a ruling.
Yeah.
So all right. So it's fair enough. We accept that point. Members, so you're saying generally with the rest of the proposals, you think that they would help improve the formulation?
Yes. they would to a very they would to a very large extent check it. And,
all right.
So we don't have any serious objections to some of
legal services.
There's also, Chair, if I may just
add,
the issue around a definition by Sankar, and actually quite surprising that we should have a definition for child and youth care substance abuse treatment centers, as if there are such treatment centers dedicated to children. What you find normally is that you would have the normal treatment center for all age groups, but with a particular section of that center dedicated to children, because you don't want them to be mixed up. You don't want children to be in the same group and to be mixed with the adults. So there I'm not sure, and I've conferred with my colleagues, all the treatment centers that we know about so far that we have registered are all dedicated to all age groups, and there's no specific center that, and I don't see us it would be quite expensive for this country to go the route of establishing treatment centers for children only. But obviously the provisions of the Child Act still apply there in terms of the care of children and all those kinds of things.
The child and youth care centers, do they provide for situations where some of the children who are admitted may have problems, and do they get provided for in that context? Mr. Vivier, can you talk to me through your microphone?
Chairperson, yes, it is a given that some of the children that land up in child and youth care centers do have an addiction problem, but most of the time they would rather refer those children to a rehab center who are actually geared to deal with those children and transfer them back to a child and youth care facility.
This would be facilities for adults. Or would they be child specific facilities for children specifically?
Facilities that will cater for adults and youth.
Sorry, I didn't hear?
No, they will transfer these kids then to the treatment center, as Ms. Kira indicated, which will make provision for children as well as adults, but they are accommodated.
Separate facilities for children in the same sense.
Yes.
I see. All right.
Okay.
Ms. Dudley?
I think the point there is that if we get a definition like treatment center means public treatment or private treatment center, which means nothing, we actually haven't defined what a treatment center is, and it's not clear that it must be clear that there's treatment centers for children and there's treatment centers for adults, even if it's under the same or in the same facility. So it's probably not just exactly the way they're putting it.
Not a treatment center for adults, but provision is made within a treatment for. Ms. Sample, you want to provide guidance?
The treatment center should provide for the treatment of adults and children in separate facilities or something like that.
Spelled out in the legislation? Yeah. Chief Director?
Chair, I know that the definition for treatment center refers to private and public, but then there's a definition of public treatment center which becomes specific and makes reference to a particular clause in the bill itself. So if you go and look at the definition of what is a private or a public treatment center, it becomes clearer. But I think what we can do is to have a combination of the suggested definitions and also take this, and include them with our...
You're saying the body of the bill actually describes what a public or a private treatment center is?
Chair, because when you look at the definition, there's a definition of a public treatment center, which says it means a treatment center established by the minister in terms of Section 11.
Does Section 11 clearly articulate what a public treatment center is?
Well, I would not know whether that would be to your satisfaction, Chair, but... Yeah, it basically says that it's for the treatment and training of people, of service users. I'm not reading in detail, but basically says the public treatment center would be established for the treatment and training of service reception, treatment and training of service users. So
would it cover the elements that are proposed in this definition that the presenter is putting forward?
Yeah, Sure, that's why I'm saying a combination of both would work out better.
Would you prefer to move it to a definition specific, or would you still insist on describing it in the clause by adding those elements that are lacking in the description in clause 11?
Sure, or rather, because the clauses themselves are detailed in terms of what a treatment center, a private treatment center or a public treatment center does. But I think we can cross-reference as we define. For example, in some instances, there's no need to define something that is clearly articulated in the body of the bill. Because, for example, let's speak about a public treatment center, and it refers you to clause 11. When you go and look at clause 11, it becomes clear. But I'm not saying we should not at all try and have a definition in the definition section.
I would not support the cross-referring on definitions. No. We want the definition. I don't want to meet a definition that cross-refers me to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to pick up the act and say, oh, is this what a treatment center means? And then on the body of the act, it must talk about the what happens in that treatment center, not define the treatment center itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the clear distinction. And that's the first point. The second point that I would not want to see back when this bill comes back.
So you're saying it's not just a matter of style, but it's
no.
substantive grounds why
exactly.
We prefer to have a definition in addition to a description
body
of the law.
Because, Chair, if I run a treatment center and the bill is passed, I firstly want to check what constitutes how a treatment center is defined by this piece of legislation. So I'll read the definition. Then when I paste and I read and read and get to 11, and then 11 should be able to assist me with the actual, the hows and the what in a treatment center, so that I can merge whether what I am doing, whether firstly the center that I'm running is a treatment center in terms of classification. Secondly, then I can go to section 11 and say whether what I'm doing in that facility as defined as a treatment center complies with what is expected of me. And those two clarities must not be mixed up. That's the one thing. The second thing that I want to talk to say is that we took a decision earlier that we are not going to have a separation between a public and a private, except by the basis that a public is the one that is established by government. But in terms of compliance, that because the minute we start separating them, and we know that government-run facilities are the worst in terms of compliance. They are the worst in terms of monitoring. So we are not going to separate public and private, because we say the norms and standards must be the same. Because practice now says that your private ones are for the rich and the classy status, and they get a better service, and you go to government facility, you get a poor service. So in this legislation, we must balance that. The minimum norms and standards must apply to both public and private. There shouldn't be separate norms for both. And hence, in the definition, we can't define a public treatment center and define a private. We're defining a treatment center. Whether it's public or private, at the end of the day, it's a treatment center.
Let me say the substantive issue relating to regulation. Is a matter that we'll still get to when we get to that clause. I know that there is a relationship between that and the definition, which is what we're currently discussing. Now, looking at clause 11, I don't think it fits what could constitute a definition of a public treatment center. It does not provide the essential elements of what would constitute a public treatment center as such. The proposal from the organization seems to suggest that state ownership should be one of the elements of defining it as a public treatment center. I am thinking there are different concepts: controlled by the state, owned by the state,
well, funded by the state could be a private one that's subsidized. Wholly subsidized might be wholly subsidized and yet privately owned. I suppose owned is the, one of the dynamics, of course, has been that, for example, with regards to old age homes, all right? The old age home is wholly funded by the state for many years. One day, the NGO that owns and runs it decides that we're going to sell this thing. And it's going to be used for a totally different purpose. And then you try to intervene to say this thing is where it is because of public money, and they tell you, but sorry sir, or sorry ma'am, this is private property. We do as we please with private property. The property market is good. We're going to sell this whole facility because some company wants to start a factory here. You know, on what basis do you block them from doing that? In terms of the Schools Act, for example, I know there's provision for an endorsement to be made in the DITS registry in terms of the registration of the property, that you can't simply, you know, alienate the property without permission of the minister or something of that nature. And that would apply to a wholly funded, for example. In fact, there, it doesn't matter whether it's a public or private school. When you decide, I think, if my memory serves me well, to alienate the school for other purposes, you need some kind of approval. Something of that nature. I think we need to look at it closely, because you could have a situation where suddenly after investing so much money, I don't know how the funding regime itself works, whether you fund capital assets or you only fund the actual services that get rendered, because that could also make a difference. People would say, in any case, you haven't contributed a cent to the actual worth of the asset. All your money has been confined to funding the upkeep and the services that have gone into the beneficiaries of the service here. Therefore, you have no say in telling us that we can't do as we please with our property. If we decide to deregister this thing and basically sell it off, you know. So I just need to check, is there existing policy? It's happened with older persons, and it may happen with other facilities. What is the approach of the department on this issue?
At this point, in terms of the general approach, that will be coming, I think, in due course with the other piece of legislation that we're looking at, that will be aligned to the policy on financial awards. That element that you're dealing with in terms of ownership of property is going to be addressed there, because the problem here is that, for instance, now we're talking treatment centers, but these are not the only facilities that you'll be looking at. Only the private facilities or public facilities that currently exist. We're also looking at establishing community-based treatment centers that will be looking at people that are diverted. I think we'll discuss the issue of diversion. It has been raised earlier. That are diverted maybe from, from the courts or whatever the case may be, but they require treatment within a community. And obviously, if there is a building that is currently not being utilized and what have you, that the department can actually, on certain conditions, make funds available. The policy on financial awards also make provision for that. Make funds available for the purchasing of that facility for rehabilitation purposes. Chair, I can give you a living example that we have in terms of Noburg and how Noburg got to acquire the building that it is currently utilizing. it's currently utilizing. That building was a Transnet building, and it was sold to Noteworth for a few rents because of the fact that it was going to serve the purpose that, you know, serve the community in terms of providing the kind of services that are required by the country as a whole and the community in particular. So there are those incidents, and quite a number of them. In the Western Cape, we also have those incidents where facilities are sold at nominal cost by a department, but it's not sold. There's an understanding, an agreement between maybe the department and, as you correctly said, for instance, with old age homes, there was an agreement between the Department of Housing and the people that own these facilities, so that they would be utilized for the purpose of, for this purpose, and that they would be opened up to other races and all those kinds of things. So there were certain conditions that were laid down. So whilst I agree, Chair, that in terms of the norms and standards, we cannot differentiate, but there are a lot of other areas for which we require to differentiate on. For instance, in terms of inspections, what we do normally is to do inspections in private facilities. Those are regulated, they have to be there. But in terms of your public treatment centers, it's done in terms of the PFMA, it's done in terms of service delivery legislation, where the HOD becomes responsible. So once the inspection is done, the accountability rests with the HOD of that particular area to make sure that the services are properly provided and so on. So I think there is room, there is a need for us to differentiate in our definitions.
Who holds who accountable in that situation? What if the circumstances in the public facility deteriorate and it is in the name of the DG? Is it up to this committee to then call the DG and be the ones that act as the inspectorate? How does the DG inspect himself?
Yeah.
How do we ensure that we separate the function of establishing and running a home by the state on the one hand, and the function of ensuring nonsense standards being maintained in that home, which is again a responsibility of the same entity? Where is the separation of powers there? We always talk about separation of this and that, independence, etc. How do we ensure the separation? Honorable
Because we are hungry, but we also want to give the department enough work to go and do before we see them to put a bright smile on our faces on Tuesday. I want to say to Sister Keller, we've done that in the Children's Act with the Child and Youth Care Centers, and I strongly and very strongly feel that I'm not going to support a piece of legislation that's going to give government to be the law unto themselves, because I have seen what happens in government-run institutions, and nobody cares. So I am not going to be party to anything that does not convince me otherwise. The last point, while I have the floor, Chair, is I just want to really request that actually all of the definitions, with an exception of three or four, requires work, Chair. And I don't know whether we agreed whether we're removing the cross-referring, because I want to request that we remove cross-referring from definitions, because where they are referring us, we're not getting the definition. It talks about something else, so I don't want to see cross-referring. I mean, a service user is not defined. Even all of the submissions did not talk to that, so I just want that to be highlighted. Service user means a person who is admitted to a treatment center in terms of section 20, 28 of or 20. When you go to 28 and 29, it tells you something completely different. It just says, it outlines the process of how that person, who's still not defined, going to access a service. So no. The service user must be defined, because 28 is not telling me what the service user is. It just gives me the process of how that person is going to be. And when we come to sections, we'll talk to the content of that. And that actually all of them say. The outpatient, the halfway house, all the definitions, if we can all agree that we need to please just go back and sharpen up. So that we're clear in terms of what we are saying. At the moment we are not saying anything. And then the one other point is, Chair, on the issue of the sex addiction and all the other interesting gambling, I did express an opinion that we can't deal with that on this piece of legislation. Because here we're talking about substances that you take that goes inside your body. And I don't think sex goes in anybody's body. Oh. Except making a baby, of course, that's a different process. Gambling doesn't either, so it doesn't qualify. But on the definitions of substance of abuse, I wanted to then indicate that on that section, given the input that sports has given us, we also might want to have a look at that, because as it stands at the moment, it runs sort of the substances that I concoct in my own kitchen. It doesn't require, and that is the most dangerous one at the moment. So the definition as it stands does not take that into consideration. And maybe we also need to then also build into, you know, the dopings and the whatever, even if we cross-refer to the relevant piece of legislation, then that would assist. But also, TSA, on that same definition, if somebody could look at what the Register of Medicine have, they always have like a footnote that indicates it. I just don't have it now, but if they can look at what the Register of Medicine says around substance of abuses in relation to treatment, because you already have a reference there. So if yeah. Oh, and then I wanted to support the addition of disabled people.
But the definition of substances of abuse in part refers to specific categories of tests. It's given a general kind of description, and then it refers to substances mentioned in this pieces of legislation. Wouldn't between the three elements of the definition not this area be covered? That is the ones that you concoct in your kitchen.
No.
Okay, before you respond, let me first hear Ms. Dudley.
Just on that, would it not help if we put including but not limited to alcohol, yes, over the counter, drugs, whatever? Just on that thing. Then I just want to say I agree that we must focus specifically on substance abuse and not broaden it. When you were talking about those issues around who owns the property and how they got it and what those issues are, I think that's just very important, because we're going to have to clear all of those issues up, because at the same time you don't want to dissuade or hamper public-private, sort of in the future, public-private partnerships and things opening up. So all of that has got to be carefully looked at when it's relevant in whatever you were talking about. And then just say, we must be careful not to limit private treatment centres to 24-hour treatment centres, because they might take any shape we want them to take in the future. So that would be.
All right, Ms. Weber.
Substance abuse should not be specified certain scheduled drugs. Because scheduled, scheduled drugs.
All right, she's made the proposal. You're protected, Ms. Weber. Have you finished your point? Yes, I'm asking you. No, you have the chairperson to protect.
All right.
The scheduled
drugs, wouldn't they be scheduled in terms of a law? Is this the law that's mentioned here? The medicine court, whatever. But those are the points that have been put forward.
Yeah.
Department, do you want to have a response on this? Let me start with the chief director, the legal advice.
Thank you, Chair. So I wanted to start first. I think I have a
couple of my away from
away. Okay, thank you, Chair. I wanted to respond to a number of questions.
Yeah.
The one related to what happens when we funded a private treatment center and it acquires some property. Other than the policy on funding, sometimes you regulate this through contractual means, where you have a contract with the service provider. You become
very wanted to come to that, but proceed.
Okay. And you become very specific and say, we give you this money, you can acquire property, but if you acquire property, it's not, you then indicate whether or not it becomes that person's property or whether or not it becomes a...
Without wanting to interrupt you, you know what is the story? Some of those contracts apparently got lost.
Yeah.
And as it is, some of the contracts that were signed 50 years ago have not only gathered dust, but they've been lost in the archives.
Yeah.
And probably the institutions themselves might not be very prone. So one of the advantages of having some of these things institutionalized, either in the legislation itself, or at least provide for in the legislation a mechanism of registering the interest when the property or the transfer is registered with the deeds office, is that the deeds office usually does not lose documents. You'll still find deeds that date back to 1700 and 1800 and all of that. They're good with record keeping. But in any case, if something has not been endorsed in the deed paper, all right, in the title deed itself, who is going to discover the contract and say, hang on, somebody's about to sell the property, stop him because there's a contract here. You know, the deeds office receives papers,
mm-hmm.
an offer from the purchaser, and an acceptance from the seller, and all the paperwork from the notary, what's this, the conveyancer, and they look and they say the papers are in order, registered in France, property sold.
Mm-hmm.
Then breach of contract comes later. All right. If anybody discovers that there's a contract and has the is meticulous enough to say, we've picked up that there's a sale that's happened or is happening, and that there is a contract that restricts that sale, and therefore we want to have what method are you going to use, an interdict, or are you going to sue afterwards? So it just gets more and more complicated. You see, if you rely on contract. And I can assure you, if you don't keep proper records, those NGOs are not going to help you by giving you copies of contracts in their possession. That will compromise their interest. Why would they want to do that?
Yeah.
You see? So it's based on experience. Theoretically, it may sound waterproof, but reality tells a different story. And that's the issue. So go and look at it. Look at the schools and talk to the people at education. Look, as Honorable Bokopane said, look at the Children's Act. Maybe we did a perfect job there. Maybe we can improve on it, but at least apply your mind to what is proposed there. I don't know what we did with older persons. But yeah, this is a challenge. We may not be able to resolve it finally in this book. And as Ms. Keller has indicated, they may want to come up with a trumping provision of a bill that we've waited for more than a decade and a half, and that has never been forthcoming. We've seen a lot of policy documents, but we are yet to see a bill coming our way. and we're still waiting. All right.
Okay.
Yes.
Chair, I think you do have a point in as far as regulating the ownership of property acquired through state funds through a contractual obligation. But we will try and re-look. It may well be that it could be very easy to include it within this bill to just say if you acquire property through funds provided by the state, then it should be registered with the deeds office and where you then indicate the ownership of the property. There was another the issue around the definition.
Whatever it is, we're saying you must also look at existing systems and see what...
Yeah.
How they approach the matter, so that we don't reinvent the wheel if we don't have to.
Okay. So there was one around the definition. I thought we agreed that we would a combination of the suggested and the current definition should actually give us a better definition. But I think at the same time, I'm trying to say cross-referencing is permissible as long as the definition itself is clear. Because if a person who reads a definition and the definition is clear, but it helps that person to even locate in the body of the bill itself, where exactly are you going to find a private treatment center?
No, what we're saying is that as long as we in this committee find that in that specific instance that approach is helping solve the problem.
Okay.
So I agree that there is no general rule of drafting that rejects, that prohibits that style of definition. But we are looking at what would be ideal from our point of view as this committee, whether we are satisfied that the way in which things have been couched here serves the purpose, our purpose. And if we are not satisfied that this serves the purpose, then we would be in a position to put it to you, and you'd have to come with very strong, cogent reasons. It's not about whether this form or that form is allowed. It is about whether this approach in this context is actually helping or is actually not helping the situation. And we're saying, the way we see it, it doesn't really looks like it doesn't really solve the problem.
No, Chair, I was saying we will ensure that the definition on its own is sufficient, but then the cross-reference will only be there to assist the reader to locate exactly where in the body of the bill is a particular...
No, once the definition is self-sufficient, then you don't need to cross-reference. Cross-referencing is just a way of defining.
Okay, okay, fine, I accept that.
Yeah, we don't
the
want cross-referencing on definition. That's
Chair, one protection.
No, I'm just asking the Chair that we want to affirm to the Department that we don't want cross-referencing on definitions, and that's a decision we have the right to take. We don't want it. So it should not be there for whatever reason when the bill comes back.
All right. This is just to amplify the issue. It's not an altercation. It should not be construed as such. All right.
Chair,
the point has
point.
Been made. All right. Yeah.
I know my colleague, I think we need to really deal with what the requirements for registration or the establishment of a treatment center, be it a private or a public treatment center. Because this issue was raised over and over. It's not only that it was raised today. And I wanted to find out, I'm not quite sure whether I agree with my colleague, Ms. Keller, in terms of, let's say, for example, we are saying a treatment center, private treatment center, that the certification for registration will be valid for a specific period of time. Now, I'm trying to find out, are we saying if it's a public treatment center, even if things go wrong, it will still continue operating? Or if you want to establish it, don't you have to meet certain requirements? And I think that's something that was raised by some of the members of the public. So I thought maybe you can...
Yeah. No, the way Ms. Keller is putting it, she's saying that there may be certain conditions that may be appropriate to be included in relation to a private center, that might not be appropriate in relation to a public center. Now, the way to do it is either to say that this is these are the criteria for the registration of a treatment center, and then exclude certain, if there are discordant reasons why certain criteria should be excluded in relation to a public treatment center, all right? Where you either put in a waiver to say, notwithstanding the list, paragraph X, Y, Z does not apply in relation to a public treatment center, something of that nature. Then we can look at it and decide whether we are in agreement with the exclusion or not. But as it is, the public center seems to be completely excluded from any form of regulation as such. Ms. Keller, you want to respond?
Chair, I just need clarity from the committee chair.
Right.
Yes, Chair, I am. The clarity that I'm seeking from the committee chair in order to address the issue that the committee is raising is, if we make those kinds of exclusions, it actually means a lot of exclusions. But two, it also means, the understanding that I would like to get from the committee is that how would that assist us in terms of ensuring that the inspections, as you put it, Chair, are done in public treatment facilities. Because in any case, the private treatment facilities, there are inspections that are done by government in terms of this legislation. It's still, even if it's in terms of a different procedure or legislation, it's still not going to be done by the same
all
department, whether it is
Can I interject you?
No.
All I'm hearing from you is that you are defending the point of exempting public treatment centers from being subjected to rigorous regulation. I'm not referring to rigorous inspection, I'm talking rigorous regulation. That is putting it in the law that the following norms and standards shall apply in a public facility in the law, and that the inspectorate that does that would then use those criteria. We've been through that exercise in relation to children's facilities where way back in the 90s, actually, we ended up having to write up stuff in the regulations because the Act, and that's been the trend over the years, the trend has been to assume that government would be exemplary in the way it runs facilities, but only to be disappointed to find that the quality of service in the public sector falls far short of the standards already being met in the private sector. How do you respond to that? That is the concern that Honorable Bokopane Zulu is having. And thus far, your comment is not giving me joy. I know I interrupted you, I interjected you, and maybe you'll prove me wrong as you proceed. But thus far, the sense I'm getting from your response is that you're not helping to allay our fears in this regard. But please proceed. I interjected you.
You're still on the floor. Sorry,
you also want to interject as well.
Sorry.
All right. Do so.
I'm going to have to run.
You use the mic.
I'm going to have to run right now because just know how you intend to proceed for today, or we then picking up on this from Tuesday next week.
No. We're doing a once-off. We're resolving the issues as we go along, and we're issuing instructions as we go along. When they come back next week, they come with draft amendments for us to consider on the issues that we've resolved. We're going to run this process until the the until tomorrow. Tomorrow morning won't say because it's caucus. In the afternoon we're continuing. We're going to run through this thing until we finish, so that before the end of the week we've given all instructions. All right? So that when they come back next week, there are no new issues to raise.
Okay, but what time do we have today?
I think we're going to have to adjourn by 6-ish, because it's study group day today, and I would want to allow study groups also time to go and confer, because tomorrow it's caucuses. They might want to prepare for their caucuses on this thing. So I would say 6 o'clock so that people can go to the study groups. But tomorrow, see, the longer we take today, the better the chances of us adjourning before midnight tomorrow. But we don't adjourn, and especially because, remember, Friday is the debate, so you might need Thursday night to polish your speeches. Because this week doesn't pass before we finalize our instructions arising from this stuff here. So does that answer your question?
Yes.
All right. Lovely.
We'll probably back from 2. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be back at 2. We're not adjourned yet. All right. Miss Keller was still on the floor, and Miss Rajbali wants to raise something quickly.
Yeah, I just would say that I will be missing also, because I'm going to the EPC on my debate schedule. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, maybe you'll rejoin us at some point. All right, Miss Keller, you were still on the floor. And there's been a lot of interruptions and interjections.
It's fine, Chairperson. I'm looking at Section 4, Chairperson, on Chapter 2, which talks to the development on compliance with norms and standards. Chairperson, the department, there's no distinction that is made in this clause between private treatment centers and public treatment centers. And if it were to give, and all of them would have to be inspected by the department in any case. So in chapter 2, clause 4, there is that provision that they shall be compliant with, that they will prescribe the minimum norms and standards for service delivery. And it just doesn't exclude public institutions. But having said so, perhaps in chapter 5-4, we can include a clause that says that public institutions will have to comply with norms and standards, if that is the issue, Chairperson. But I think the definition, there's room for distinction between the two definitions of public treatment center and private treatment center, because the conditions are not the same. But in terms of compliance with norms and standards, we can put in a clause there, Chairperson, under subsection 4, create a subsection 4 under 11 that says that the public treatment centers shall be compelled to comply with minimum norms and standards as determined by the department.
Okay.
You are on the floor, Honorable Bukhpani.
I'm very hungry, so part of being very hungry.
You're not going to eat food until we've sorted this one out.
No, I don't want to sit here and sort this one out, because I don't want to deal with the same department that keeps on saying different things. We've dealt with this thing on the Children's Act, around the issue of health and youth care centers that are state and public owned. We've dealt with this on the older person, and it's still the same department. I'm just saying, when do we get the energy? Because we need to work towards creating synergy.
Well, you've made you've registered the complaint, but make the point.
The point is that I still say the solution that Ms. Keller is proposing does not make me happy.
But why not?
There are two things. Is that what is good for Mike must be good for Henrietta.
Hmm.
And that's what we must say. She's saying we must register. She still says it's different. We must still accept the difference. And then we must then just put in a clause that says public blah, 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 blah. And that's the part I don't agree with.
No, the way I understand her. What I understand her to be saying. Yeah.
he's saying that a close 12. I'll come back to you. He is effectively, rather, let me not think his thing. He's effectively saying that clause 13 deals with the process of registering, and only private entities need register, all right? Because there you're not dealing with criteria. The place where you deal with you're not dealing with nonsense standards that need to be complied with and that needs to be enforced in a facility. That where you're dealing with that is in clause 4, where you have a whole list of things that go into the setting of norms and standards. Now, she's saying in that regard, that would apply both in relation to public and private. All right? So if we're dealing with issues of the quality of service, the way in which people are treated in the facilities, etc., etc., the place where that gets regulated is in relation to the setting of norms and standards, and that would apply equally to both public and private. That seems to be what I understand her to be saying. Are you saying that, or are you saying something different? Let's just confirm.
Yes, Chairperson, I am saying this.
And Ms. Bukhupane Zulu, you disagree with that?
That is where I'm still saying my understanding, that part I understand, but the problem I have is exactly the way you are saying. Are we now saying that government ones are not going to be registered? That's what we are saying.
What is the first question we have to ask is, what is the purpose of registration? Because my understanding is that if it's government owned, it means that it is on the register already by virtue of this 101 laws in terms of which that facility is already registered. It's registered as an asset of the state in terms of relevant legislation. It is compliant with the PFMA in terms of the financial management thereof. It is compliant with a myriad of other laws that apply automatically. So the only reason why you want to register the private facilities is because, first of all, they need to be recognized as such.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What you may want to say is that when you establish a public facility, you may want to describe what it is, partly through the definition that we agreed on, but also in terms of, she's saying that the nonsense standards would describe what that facility is and what conditions it's supposed to comply with for purposes of inspection. Yeah. All right.
Earlier on, we took a decision, and I'm saying, hence I said it's the same department and we're dealing with the same services. We said that there are two, and that answers the purposes of
registration. All right.
We said that, one, we're dealing with a program and a service, and the two are separate. Now, you are asking, in my understanding, the purposes of registration.
All right.
The purposes of registration for a place that provides a particular service, in this case, can be a treatment center that's owned by the state or whatever, in whatever form. What I would have a problem with in terms of, if you are talking about the physical structure that stands there, that is going to be registered, it's a parliament, blah, 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 blah. Right?
All right.
And I'm talking about the registration, like you are rightfully saying, the purpose of the registration. One is that it's that you get public treatment facilities in different forms.
All right.
Others are public, but I established it. Like, it's the same thing with drop-in centers, with what and what. And that's the same discussion.
Mm.
Hence, I'm taking us back to that discussion,
mm.
to say that we must always remember that it's not like the state is going to establish hospitals like we see them with regards to the treatment center. That is not what we are talking about.
Mm.
We are talking about a place where a service is going to be provided.
Mm.
And for the purposes of registration, that's what we must understand.
Mm.
To say, what are we registering? Yes, in terms of the bricks and mortar, that will be registered as an asset in the asset register of the state. I'm not talking about that.
Mm.
I'm talking about the registration of what happens inside that bricks.
So you're saying that the registration point is the formalization of the purpose for which the structure is being created.
Otherwise, that is my understanding, because we're talking about a treatment center where a service is going to be provided. So we, like you rightfully say, then we must then agree what is the purposes of the registration. In this case, and for me, the purposes of registration, as I understand it, is the same thing, because we're talking about centers. It's the same thing that we did. We said ECG centers that are belonging to the public, that are funded, will be registered in a particular manner. Hence, I thought that the discussion in terms of areas of welfare services, which this is one of them, are registered at different levels. You register the program, the actual program of what the service users are going to be doing when they are inside those walls, but you register that particular area, that center, you give it the recognition that it can provide that particular service. But it will, in any event, be registered in the asset register as the brick and mortar, that house that stands there.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those different types of registration, and that is where I don't agree with you and Ms. Keller, to say that clarity must be there. Because it takes us back to the discussion we had in terms of who owns. Is it public work or is it? So for the purposes of that discussion, that the bricks and mortar is usually owned by public work, we had that discussion. Which means welfare service, social development does not register the bricks and the mortar. It registers the services rendered. And in all the legislation that talks to registration in relation to social development, talks to what I'm talking about, not to the bricks and mortar. And that is where I don't agree with both of you.
Ms. Keller, what happens if the facility, the public facility, is no longer compliant? How do we deal with that in this legislation?
Chair, for me, a public facility is like any other service that must be regulated. I mean, the minister has got the ultimate responsibility and is accountable to Parliament to ensure that whatever services we are providing are up to standard. And to that extent, for me, it wouldn't. I don't know. I'm not sure, Chair.
Let me tell you what my question is. I'm saying, here is the norms and standards that you have set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say we have this facility. The minister establishes it in terms of either clause 11, right? Now, suddenly the facility is falling short of the norms and standards in clause 4. What do you do in terms of this act? What steps do you, what remedies do you have against the facility? It may be owned by the department, but here it is, it's non-compliant.
Let's use the Cullinan example.
All right.
Look at what happened in Cullinan in the Center of Rehabilitation of Disabled Children. That is even current and recent. It's owned by the state. It became a pigsty. Children's rights got abused so badly. What have we done? Or what are we doing? Let's use that as an example now.
Chief Director.
Sure, there's a difference. In terms of a public treatment center, the minister can give notice of his intention to abolish the public treatment center. And the minister can then provide reasons why he wants to abolish it. The distinction, though, is that the requirement seems to be, in fact, the requirement for the establishment of a private treatment center more stringent.
The whole
regime that provided for in the bill.
For the private treatment center.
No, for
the public treatment center, it basically says the minister must, after giving 3 months. After giving 3 months notice of his intention to abolish a public treatment center, he can then abolish it, after having received responses from the...
And regular inspections and the submission of reports and all of that, is that also clearly regulated in respect of a public center?
No, Chair, it's not to the same... It's actually not to the same extent as the private treatment center.
Why is it not?
Chair, that's why I said earlier that I'm not sure whether I quite agree with my colleague around the requirements around the two centers.
All right, maybe it's time for you to elaborate that earlier point that you were making. We didn't give you a chance to expatiate on it.
Chair, I'm saying, when we look at, if you want to establish a private treatment center, there are stringent requirements.
Yes.
You need to write to the Director General and say, I want to establish a private treatment center. The Director General must then look at whether or not you comply with the prescribed requirements. If it's not satisfied, it's not going to grant you a registration certificate, which means you cannot run a private treatment center.
Yes.
He can, however, also give you a conditional registration for 12 months and say, within 12 months, I want you to go and look at the following. But within that period, if something else happens, he can also give you a notice to say, I'm going to cancel your registration. That requirement does not apply to a private treatment center.
Yes. Now, hence your proposal that a dispensation needs to be created to introduce formal control,
yes,
even in relation to public treatment. So you seem to be moving in the same direction as Honorable Bokopane. Ms. Keller, convince me otherwise.
Chairperson, I am not refusing the fact that there has to be control mechanisms put in place. But those control mechanisms cannot be by way of registration, because the very person that's going to register, in any case, would have to do those or would need to exercise those. So it doesn't make a difference.
What tool would you propose in relation to
what I had proposed, Chairperson, was that in terms of Section 11,
all right,
we've talked to the establishment and abolition of public treatment centers.
All right.
The minister then ensured, I mean, we can put a clause there that indicates that the minister shall ensure compliance with the norms and standards for public treatment centers. Because the minister, in all the services that are provided, is accountable to Parliament. So, Chair, I'm not sure how the registration, I think I hear what is being said, but I'm not sure how the registration is going to assist us in that regard. But in terms of ensuring compliance with the minimum norms and standards, I think it just that the minister would have to take responsibility, as they do with all the other services.
All right. I normally do not get intimidated by my members, but when they become hungry, I concede to the intimidation, because I want to keep them in the committee, otherwise I might lose them. I think that I'm going to adjourn the meeting for lunch. But on this note, all right, that personally I have no difficulty in creating separate dispensations for the registration processes or licensing processes relating to public and private. There may well be good grounds for differentiation. But I think that the point that's being made, that we cannot simply assume that the systems would necessarily be in place in relation to public facilities unless we have created those systems in the law. Based on past experience in other areas as well, that we do need to apply our minds as to what should be the kind of dispensation that we're going to create, whether the same dispensation can apply in the public facilities, and if not, all right, what kind of dispensation we want to put forward in relation to the licensing and de-licensing, so that there is some degree of separation. If you look at SASA, we've created an agency that pays grants, all right? The inspectorate is not located within SASA itself. It's located within the department, so that there's that separation, all right? Because you don't want the DG to be the person who runs the home and who also inspects the home. If he's run out of budget, he probably cut corners, because he's looking at the priorities elsewhere. So you need to have an entity that is responsible, and that's going to fight for that budget, and that's going to say, look, I have this statutory obligation. If I fall short of the standards, I'm going to be closed down. And you need another arm within government, the same government, that says we're going to close you down because the standards that you're keeping there are falling short of the standards that we have set. Now, if you're going to say all of that is under the umbrella DG, where are we going to ensure the separation? So we need to find a way of, I agree we may want to deal with government entities slightly differently, but the underlying issue that we need to hold facilities accountable and not assume that they will be accountable by way, first of all, of creating institutional arrangements in the legislation itself, all right, and procedures and processes and formalization of things in the same or similar way as we seek to do in relation to private facilities. On that note, let's go have lunch, let's reflect on this thing, let's look at how other legislation deal with this, and then let's find solutions as we proceed. Thank you. 2 o'clock, what's the time now? 2 o'clock, we're resuming. We're having finger lunch, it seems, here. Sorry again, is it because the restaurants are full? Can I get the committee secretary to make the announcement?
Thank you, Chair.